Okay, I remembered to turn the recording on. I didn't think of it until partway through the earlier one. So it was my first experience watching one because I watched to catch up on what I had missed, the part I had to be gone. And only the people who have a picture or their actual person on there show up in the recording. Everybody else is absent. You hear their voice if they're talking, but otherwise there's no block like the rest of us. It's kind of funny. I thought the names would show up, but they don't. Anyway, FYI. There's that lovely Christmas tree. So how is everybody doing, holding up?
Hanging in there.
We're holding.
Mm-hmm. Next week is my last week for the year, so I'm almost there.
Oh, me too. Right.
Well, I know Nikki was just saying that, you know, in most places, classified staff have to keep working even after faculty gets to go home. So I know I was emailing with one of the librarians yesterday and I said, can you know, when you get a chance, can you look at this? And she said, today's my last day. And I'm like, what? How could that be?
Yeah, our director is faculty and has a 214-day contract. But the library is open 265 days, so, that which is my contract is 265.
Oh, different. So, well, it's 4:01 on my computer, so I know we're a small group yet, but maybe we'll have some additional people who always seem to trickle in. So we'll get started. As I said a bit ago, I remembered to turn the recording on. That's an improvement. And welcome to this fourth now circulation work group office hour. And as a couple of us were saying earlier, you know, it doesn't matter how many people come, it helps to commiserate, it helps to share ideas. At 1 o'clock, there were really a lot of good information and ideas being bounced around about, you know, how to do distributions, how to do returns, how to set up your space if you're going to be open. So what people are doing, you know, because it's winter and we can't actually have people sitting in our parking lots very easily anymore. A lot of things change with the time of year. It gets dark early. And then also, you know, change of semesters. And who knows what will come with state orders. I was just in another meeting of another consortium where, you know, the library director's already worrying about, you know, shelter in place and what are we going to do? And I was like, whoa, wait, we're not quite there yet, but who knows? Who knows? So at the end of the 1 o'clock, people were talking about distributing other items besides library items. So I think there was some interest in continuing that discussion. I also think Jamie had another question from last week about staffing in Alma and how that might be. So those might be two areas. And then please feel free to, you know, ask any questions, offer any information you want, or, you know, so I'm gonna quiet.
Well, Tatiana was the one who was asking about using Elma to distribute non-library materials, but she's not here. I wasn't sure if she was showing up. So maybe we can do the other question first.
Okay.
And then maybe she'll pop in and then she'll be able to hear
That makes sense. Yeah, and she just might not be on yet. It's still early.
Right, and Jamie's here, so.
Yeah. So I hate to put you on the spot, Jamie, but do you want to sort of reiterate your question?
Sure. I was just curious who is handling sort of the nuts and bolts of Alma in terms of setting up terms of use or policies or setting up the notifications that go out to students. Does everyone have a systems librarian who is setting all of that stuff up? What role are your classified circulation individuals having in this? Because we have at Antelope Valley College, which is where I'm at, it's a two library system. We're one campus, but we have what we call Palmdale Center, which is actually where I work. And it's about 15 miles away at a separate smaller center. So we do have two sites. We have a systems librarian who was one of our adjuncts, but she got hired into that position. I want to say it was like beginning of January or February, like right around the time we transitioned to Alma. So she's been handling all of that. But one of the things I find interesting is she's a librarian. And so she doesn't always know and shouldn't be expected to know our CERC policies, for example. So she goes to ask us about a specific change, not realizing that that actually involves some other pieces, et cetera, because it's not her job to know that. So I was just sort of curious how other schools structure this and handle this, and what is that working relationship between librarians and circulation classified staff at various schools?
Go
ahead, Patty.
We don't have I'm at Southwestern College in Chula Vista, California. Southern California. So we don't have a systems librarian. That's something that the faculty have always wanted to put in when they do the hiring prioritization for faculty, but we don't have a systems librarian. My staff has the one that's been dealing with the overdues notices, and right now it's really just me and one other person that are doing it. And since we didn't have curbside checkout, we basically stopped checking out when we went into remote, which was in March. We don't have a lot of notices per se, because we've been getting our material back slowly. But one of the things that mostly we've been working on is sending out a very generic notice. And then we do that manually. It's not set up to, like, you know, it's not like it's running continuously. I don't know if it even can. So like right now we just got worked on it this morning to send out a notice of letting students know that the 18th is when the campus shuts down, which is next week. So if these students have library materials and they want to clear any administrative hold, that they need their material turned in by next Friday. So we created a notice like that, but it was the classified staff that were working on it through letters and letters configurations. I don't know if that's kind of what you were looking for or asking.
Yeah, so you guys don't have a systems librarian, uh-uh. and so classified is handling the mm-hmm. notifications. So to me, it seems like classified handling the notifications is sort of a natural fit, because we're the ones handling, you know, ins and outs and all that. But I don't know how that works. If you have a systems librarian, is that encroaching on their territory if staff is doing that? And I know each school is different. At our school, for whatever reason, there's a very hard line between faculty and staff, and people are very touchy. I'm not saying like our librarians necessarily, but sort of the general gist is very touchy about, that's my area, don't do that, don't cross into that. There's I come from the public library prior to being here. I've been here for 2 years. And before that I was in public libraries, where it was very much a spirit of everybody jumps in and pitches in and helps out. And we do a lot of different things. And so it's been a bit of an adjustment for me. It feels kind of weird. Like, well, I don't want to step on anyone's toes, but isn't it okay if I help set up these letters? Like, but I don't know that that's always welcome. And I still don't always fully understand the academic setup. And so that's why I appreciate being able to ask everybody, what is it like? Is it something that other schools have successfully negotiated?
At College of the Sequoias, this is Kathy. I actually set up all of our fulfillment configurations when we switched, because our systems librarian was going to retire. So I worked very closely with her. I did the fulfillment, course reserves, you know, letters and notices, all of that configuration. And then when she retired, we have a new systems librarian in. But what she's doing is focusing on the collection, especially the electronic collection or electronic books, making sure everything's searchable. And I'm still in charge of configuring loan policies, terms of use, letters, anything that has to do with circulation, I handle. And then my coworker, who's also a library technician, he handles all of the Primo setup. It's partly because we were the two that did all the classes, that did the administration, was that the administrator test or whatever, certification. And so I handle the Alma side and he handles the Primo side. And then the systems librarian kind of works with us, but it's, she's still only in the job less than 6 months. And so she's kind of letting us handle that. But we always had a really good working relationship in our prior system with the systems librarian, that we've kind of gained the trust that we know what we're doing, and that we work with them if we're going to change anything or if they're going to change anything. So we've been given a lot of freedom to change policies, make new locations, do whatever we need to get items out to students.
That's interesting. Thanks for sharing that.
I'd say that I'm in a very different situation where it is literally just me. So I am the one that creates the locations. I'm the only one that does anything back end in Alma at all in my institution. And so for us, we have three adjuncts who do reference and instruction, but none of them know, you know, basic cataloging, just in case I'm not there to add something. But sorry, that's my son. Say hi.
Hi.
So it's when it's your, it falls on just your shoulders to do all of it. It's a little overwhelming sometimes. I wish I had someone to pass it on to.
Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm at Grossmont College. So we do have a systems librarian who was coming off of a leave when we started Alma in January. And then she in the fall, she just went on maternity leave. So our systems librarian has been not around. Our cataloging librarian was supposed to be the backup, but because she didn't do much of the configuration, wasn't very helpful. I did have a library operations supervisor who went through the certification for to be an administrator. As soon as she passed, the systems librarian took all of her administration privileges away. So like Jamie said, there are libraries where the very hard line of librarians versus technicians. And I believe that if the supervisor who is in charge of circulation would have had configuration privileges, you know, we could have just focused on borrowing and the loans and the notifications, and the librarians could do everything else, Primo, the collections, cataloging, but they decided to just be in charge of everything. So when I started in this work group, we discovered that, you know, we all have different kinds of roles, and this is one of the situations is, you know, even if I need, say, a very simple cataloging role so that I can do testing with the group, the librarians are not very willing to give anything outside of fulfillment to me, even though I'm a LibTech 3. So Jamie, you're right. I think every library system is different.
So if you needed to set up like an overdue notice, like, because obviously we've had, even if you had originally set up your notices one way, the pandemic, I'm sure, required a lot of changes to people's mm-hmm. notices. And sometimes, like for us, multiple times. I know we've pushed due dates out a few times and various other things. So when you need a change made, what is that process, Lisa, that you guys go through to get those changes made? And about how long is that usually taking? Is it well oiled and works quickly?
Well, we've had to do the Band-Aid thing and figure things out on our own, because we have not been able to do any changes while our system librarian is gone. So I've been writing a lot of notes of what all of you've been doing, because I feel like that's what should have been happening all this time. I did ask the backup librarian if she could help, but it's so over her head. I don't want to make a big to do about it, because we might actually, you know, do worse if we're not sure what we're doing with terms of use and the notifications and all. So I am not in a good boat to share anything. I've had to create a dummy patron record just so I could check stuff out to students, because students have a deadline of, you know, the end of semester. When we had to extend because we were not taking in any returns in the spring, I could not change anything, because before she left, she made the library closed in Alma, which affects, you know, a lot of the functionality. It's still like that. She will be hopefully returning January 4th, but we have to do something. And I refuse to go manual. You know, that's what I did 25 years ago. So we've made do. I've had to do a lot of manual emails to people. Luckily, our circulation isn't that overwhelming, and I've been able to do that as a public service lip tech. But yeah, I'm not very helpful with the workarounds.
I got a question. What's for the places where there is, like, they won't give you any privileges to even try to test on anything, like, what's the reason? I don't understand that. That's so interesting. Like, why? It seems like you should be testing things, and you should learn, people should know how to do this stuff, right?
Yes. They gave me a sandbox with nothing in it. I mean, it's like, this is not going to help me. You know, it's power. I am a new person. Those people are well established. We have a brand new dean. So let's just say it's in the works for the dean to inform the powers to be to give us privileges. I'm not asking for full cataloging. I'm just asking for very basic cataloging just so I can participate. So it's a work in progress.
I can speak to that a little bit in a different way. At Skyline, we're part of a three college district. And during the migration and all the lead up, all the training, all the planning and all of that, right? We were trying to figure out whether we were going to be separate colleges or an institution as a district. I mean, there was just so many more variables we were trying to deal with. And we were part of this consortium with public libraries that we had to pull out of. I mean, it was a giant mess, and it took several months before anybody like even took charge and started making some real decisions. And we had a team, we had what they called the core team. It was two librarians and two classified staff. And I was one of the classified staff. We were both circulation people. And the four of us pretty much got to pull together and direct everything that was going on for the district. And everybody was like, yay. You know, at that point, when we were going through all of this, it was all new, we were all overwhelmed. and the four of us worked together really great and that. And we were trying at the same time to hire a systems librarian. This was all to be temporary. They never could get anybody to apply for the job of systems librarian because it was posted as a 2-year temporary job. It's not intended to be a temporary job, but that was the most we could get through the board. So nobody wanted to apply for a 2-year temporary job when these jobs are like gold and people, you know, people can go somewhere and get a much better deal. So we ended up in the end, one of the librarians on our core team got detailed to be the systems librarian. And the systems librarian position is in our IT department. So it's for the district, and now it's separate from the library. And that created, we went live with Alma a year ago in December, right before we closed for winter break. When we all came back in January, and my colleague and I, we had all the permissions, right? We were administrators because we were doing all this stuff. We had nothing. We came back, we couldn't do a dang thing. And we were like, what happened? Because that new position centralized everything. And so the systems librarian is the only administrator, and everything, and the IT, the head of IT wanted to control everything. And of course he doesn't know anything about libraries, but we were very frustrated at first, and the processes had to get into place for how to request things and all of that. In the end, now that we're several months in, and things have finally smoothed out and we don't have all the you know, potholes and everything, I can see the benefits of the centralization and the standardization. And so that each of our colleges is not off doing its own thing and really messing people up. So from that standpoint, but it has been frustrating when you know all it would take is turning one switch, and you went through all that training and configuration, all I'd have to do is make this one little change, and instead I've got to submit a form and wait. So that is frustrating on one level, but it's kind of the way it's shaken out. And we've gotten, over time, we've also gotten more of our privileges back as the systems librarian figured out she couldn't keep up. And she also trusts us more. I mean, she did. We were on the team together, but then it was like she moved over to IT and everything changed. So it's kind of a long way around. We have a kind of a unique hybrid there.
And I know at City College, we've got a department in the library called automation. And in that department, there's one librarian who's a systems librarian, and then two staff members who are the automation staff members. And they work closely together to do all of the systems planning stuff. They took care of everything in Sierra, and then that systems librarian retired and somebody else came in to sort of help out, but now she's the systems librarian, and she happens to be The other person was very good at her job, but much more like they planned everything out up there. And the new person had to learn Alma because the other person retired right about that time and had to like help set everything up. But she's very collaborative. It's Katrina Ron, who asked the questions before. She's great. She's wonderful.
Helped us a lot.
Same here.
Super into figuring things out. She's got a really positive attitude. She's collaborative across the whole college and across departments. She encourages all of us to collaborate too. And even though it's still the core team of her and those two staff members,
you froze up, Amanda.
Who work really closely with everyone. Am I unfrozen now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, my computer's been doing that a lot today. I'm not sure what's up with it. Tell me if I freeze again.
Okay.
Anyway, even though they still have that core group, when planning to set everything up, they worked a lot with all of the supervisors, the classified supervisors for the different libraries that are part of CCSF, to try to come up with, like, you know, what would be the best way to do this? And what about the wording for this? And what about the wording for that? And do we want to have this, you know, happen at this time or at that time?
Yeah, there you're stuck again.
The closure and started reopening for services in fall. How about now? Now?
It comes back.
Can you hear me? You can hear me now? Okay. All right. When we started reopening for fall, they again worked with us to kind of figure out, like, how do we want to set up our loans and how do we want to make our notices? Sorry about my cats. They're losing their mind. Yeah, they keep going for the Christmas tree. So it's just things are really collaborative, especially since Katrina stepped in. Like, she's really encouraging collaboration. And I would say for Jamie, what's interesting is that at CCSF, there used to be a really big history of that really, like, divided line, like, almost animosity between staff and faculty. And what happened at CCSF was there was a huge exodus of retirements, and then a lot of new people came in, both for staff and faculty. And that really helped change the atmosphere a lot. But it's always helpful to find somebody who's been there for a long time and is also friendly and can, like, give you a history of why people are like that. Like, what the heck has been going on, you know, that everybody seems to hate each other and, like, refuses to work with each other. At CCSF, apparently there had been a history of, like, certain librarians really bossing around classified staff and, like, trying to make them do stuff when it's not their job. And, you know, when it's not the librarian's job to tell them what to do. And there was a lot of weird power stuff. And now it's different, you know, and a lot of the people who were perpetuating that kind of thing are gone. And I think it's gotten better, even though things still come up now and then. So.
Yeah, apparently there was somewhat of a similar history at the library well before I was there, and, like, to the point where things got reorganized. Like, we don't have a director of the library because there was a librarian who was in charge of things. And, like you were saying, Amanda, was bossing classified around, and then it sort of became union issues. And so a lot of those people are gone, but yet there's still people around who remember that and were there for that. And so they aren't necessarily, like, I don't work in an atmosphere where librarians won't work with classified. They are willing to work with us, and it is relatively collaborative, but I think there's enough of that residual, there's enough memory of, oh, okay, but, you know, librarians can't tell classified what to do, that they're hesitant because they worry that they'll cross a line because they remember that there had been these issues. So I just then, being relatively new myself, felt like I had to be super careful, and that if I'm asking people, well, can I just do this, that they're like, no, or that I might inadvertently upset someone because, you know, here I am trying to do something I'm not supposed to do. So that's why I was just sort of curious to hear everyone else's experiences. And it's interesting because in some ways there's a lot of similarities, and in other ways it's quite different. But I appreciate everyone sharing. It's been really helpful and interesting to me. And we have, I'm going to be taking over someone's duties. They're supposed to retire July 1st. And like you were saying, Amanda, with retirements, I think that that particular retirement might shake loose some of the reticence on the classified side, even to be doing certain things or to be collaborating with the librarians. And also sort of a reticence to deal with technology. There's a lot of, like, but this is how we've always done it, or I don't like change, or I don't understand how this was working, and, like, a lot of frustration going to Alma. So I am hopeful that with some of that, with certain people leaving, that might shake loose, and then I will have a little bit more central role. So I'm hopeful that I can kind of promote some better working relationships, and then potentially be training a person who will replace, and that maybe I can set a standard there.
I will say one thing that I've noticed that's really helpful, when we happened to kind of get lucky that we got a new dean, it was actually around the same time that I was hired, and just before, like, I guess in the midst of all the retirements, there were several strings because some golden handshakes were offered to different people to get rid of salaries, you know? But that new dean was really big on like group collaborations. And so there were a lot of cross-departmental teams made to work on different things. And that was really important because it creates an atmosphere where everybody's equal, you know? So it's not a librarian directing the work of the classified, it's a librarian or some librarians and some classifieds working together without anybody that's in charge per se. And that's been really helpful too, I think. But it is hard with that type of personality. I've worked with personalities like that, and it, you know, I've had people go to the union for me on like innocuous things that I didn't think was an issue, and it turns out that it wound up being an issue. So, you know, you never know. People are kind of difficult sometimes.
There can be a benefit to a new system, and things have to change. You know, we all moved to Alma and things couldn't stay the same.
Yeah.
I think there's also been a benefit to the fact that we did it as a state, that all of us were in this together. It was more than just our college or our district, but it's a statewide thing. And I know for me, all the collaboration that's happened with this group, with when we were on Canvas and all the discussion groups and everything, and everybody was so helpful, that has broken down some barriers too. Maybe not for everybody, but I think there's a lot of potential in that because we have other people we can turn to. We have other examples that we can share. And I found that in my situation, people are more open now than they were before. And so, because you can't always go back to, well, we've always done it this way, because now it's all new. So so that helps. But thank you for the question, Jamie. That elicited a good discussion.
I want to throw it. That's such an annoying mindset. Like, that's so hard to deal with that. Ugh, that we've always done it this way, or that wasn't written into my job description. But you know, the library has changed. Now there's this new system, and now you have to do these other things, you know? Mm-hmm.
I agree too, Lori, that it's been really helpful that everyone has changed over. I wasn't involved in any of the migration planning or any of that. And I found out about the LS, like the CCC listserv and all that stuff, after we went live with Alma, which I can't remember now if that was January or February, it feels forever ago. but having that resource, even for me as someone who really hasn't been central to the planning and the setup and all of that, has been very helpful because, like I said, I'm at my own site and I am the only classified person there. So when I came up against something, I tend to like to be someone who tinkers and figures things out and all that stuff. And I knew that wasn't the situation with my colleagues back on the main campus. And so they weren't going to have that answer of how do I fix this particular whatever thing had popped up. And once I found out about the listserv, it's like, great, I can pop a question in there. And usually within the day, sometimes within half an hour, I had an answer. And that was so amazing. And I can't remember her name, unfortunately. It's Mary out of Pasadena. But I mean, like, people are just so helpful. And like these office hours, to me, this is amazing that we have this resource. And it does help because no matter the circumstances at your own individual campus or system, you do have these resources and you have ways of finding answers for yourself if you're getting stuck or stymied or just, you know, feeling the need for some team love.
Yeah. Well, and I will say that one of Jamie's ideas out of last week's session, I was able to share with my director, who shared it with our dean, and they're running with it. So, you know, stuff happens. All right. So shall we tackle the second one that had come up, that about using Alma for things that may not belong to the library and that are non-usual items. Like, I know Kimber's had a lot of experience with that. But Tatiana, you were asking the question, right?
It was more like...
We can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. Is it good now?
It's better.
Okay, it's just the headphones.
Yeah.
It was more like sharing experience with what our system librarian is doing for IT unit. And speaking about collaboration between classified and system librarian in our particular college is super well organized. And system librarian Lila Switzer, she configured the whole system, and she maintains the system right now. She works with Alma and Primo, and she's a part-time librarian, by the way. You know, she's not even a system librarian. She's more like program coordinator, something like that. So she's they just cannot fund her permanently, which is so unfortunate for us. Lila set up a new unit in Alma specifically for IT, because IT, especially when we went online, they borrowed a lot of laptops, headphones, and hotspots to the students, and they didn't have a checkout system. So they implemented LeapCal for some time, but it's super... It's not as user-friendly as Alma. And like, we were doing something else and he knew about Alma and was curious if it's possible for them, for IT, use Alma. So Lila, our system librarian, configured a new unit, and they put data on all the items they have. And we thinking that starting the spring semester, they will check out devices via Alma. And right now they're testing the system, the unit. And it looks like it's working pretty well. So it took some creativity to put, you know, how you arrange the fields, you know, what will go into title, into author, how would you, you know, what will be the barcode and what information you want to put for each item. So it was an interesting project. We're encouraging our system librarian, Lila, to maybe prepare some kind of article and, you know, and have it published, you know, such a great idea. I don't know. We'll see.
Again, this is Patty. At our library, we would check out like recorders, calculators. We had like four drafting tables that we did. When this whole thing happened, student services and IT, they took care of checking out laptops for faculty and also for students. One of the things that's been coming up lately, the continuing ed department, their dean was hoping to get a lending tool library going, and they were actually talking about horticulture material, like in culinary, and we pushed back partly because we are not allowed, like I said, at my college, we have no curbside. We are very limited. And if we felt that it's the library's mission should be supported first for us to be able to do curbside of academic research material before we would jump into like doing knives or shovels. So that's been, but I mean, I see it down the road and we're not opposed to it, because I do think that, you know, we used to check out years when I started there, we used to also check out biology models for the biology department. They did away with it because, and they're the ones that would maintain it. They had bought the equipment and then somebody would periodically come and check on them. But eventually they wore out. And so it was a disservice for a student to check out half a leg when it was missing part, like the muscle. So, you know, they said, okay, we're going to take it back. So I don't see that it would be a bad thing to maybe do check out. But I mean, I see it as checking out smaller stuff, maybe like a small toolkit of like a little shovel and stuff, not like a, you know, the garden hoe or something. So there's things that they are trying to push for us to do. Like I said, we're not totally opposed to it, but for us right now, it's way in the future. First, let us get us started up and running again with offering our primary services, and then we would move into doing something like that. Because I know, like Kathy, I think I shared that they were checking out sewing machines, right? I believe. Quote me if I'm wrong, Kathy. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kathy. But I thought I heard somebody say that they were checking out sewing machines. So to me, that's kind of like similar, like checking out something in, like I said, like a shovel or, you know, knives. But there's another, I mean, there's training that has to go in. And there's also, where do we store the equipment, that collection, and who's going to maintain it. So that's something that is being talked at my college, but I see it happening until, and again, I hate to say it, but we really are, the library in itself is pushing back until we are allowed to do our primary services. Then we'll do a pilot project with bringing on something else to assist other departments. We have some stuff in place, like the micro recorders and calculators, but to get into a new program, we're really pushing back for a while. So,
Patricia, do you catalog those things? I mean, did you catalog those things? You know, the biology and
we did, but it was very brief. It was like a brief bib record, just basically saying, you know, arm. We gave it a barcode, and it's like if we had two sets of leg muscles, we would say leg muscle number one. You know, just a barcode, and I think we had the name, the call number would be leg number one or leg number two. It's just very brief and basic.
And it was when you already transitioned to ALMA, right?
No, but we transitioned to ALMA, we had dropped that some years ago because again that got, you know, wear and tear. It was no longer complete set. So the biology department came and got it back. But for our calculators, again, we just catalog them very basic. It's like TI-84 calculator, number one, and it has a barcode. So in calculators, we have about 30 calculators, I think. And then micro recorders, we used to check them out for the DSS services, disability support services. And again, I think we had about 70 of those. And again, the call number was DSS number one, you know, a very brief bib record. The newest thing that we've added, and now it's been 2 years, has been the drafting tables. And we started that out as a pilot project, and we only took on four. Really, I don't think you need more than four, because we've never had a demand that like, hey, we're out of a drafting table to check out. So we've had four, but again, it was a very brief record, drafting table number one, barcode. So it did go in the catalog, but just like that.
Yeah, we do something very similar. We were lucky that the campus distribution plan was basically put in place so that we could get out our materials first. And then once the director of, he's pretty much everything. he's the director of security. He's the interim IT department head and also facilities manager. I don't know, he's everything. But he saw how our system was working and adapted the rest of the campus distribution to us to match our process. So we've been, it's basically just been me and the director and very limited hours of adjuncts doing cataloging, but we've done, we have calculators that were a donation from the math department. We have 180 of them, TI-84s. We have 125 Chromebooks. We've done all of the employee tech. And let me tell you that the IT department that had been previously loaning out laptops to employees had no record of who had what at all. So we had to retroactively go and track. We had one two spreadsheets from two different IT employees, and we we smushed those together and kind of figured it out, and had to have some emails like, do you have a tag on the bottom of your computer? What's that number say? What's the, you know, so we've gone through and redone the inventory for IT just because it was a disaster. And if they wanted us to use Alma to catalog them, we're not responsible for them. They're not our property. We don't have anything other than the actual, you know, record of who has what, is basically the use of Alma for non-library materials is more of a campus-wide inventory. So anything that leaves campus has a barcode, unless it's a consumable. Like the culinary department gives ingredient bags of ingredients every week to students that they pick up every Monday or every Friday to then do their class over the weekend or their dish that they make. Same with the art. We don't barcode, you know, balls of clay. You know, if it's going to be made into something else or if it's not expected to come back, it doesn't get a barcode, but everything else does.
Interesting. Kimber, thank you very much for sharing. I see that what you do with for IT is pretty much the same what we're trying to do for our IT department. They also want to use it as an inventory system. And they also had this problem, you know, when they checked out something and it's on one of the Excel spreadsheet and they don't know really where exactly.
Exactly. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, interesting. So you already using Alma for this?
Yeah, we have been since March.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Basically, once because we wanted to get, we have our quarterly lending library that is for the amount of students that we have, the amount of materials that we get out every quarter is pretty incredible. So we were pushing to be like, how can we get students these books? You know, that it's huge. It's a huge service for our students, and once they saw what we were doing to get that out, they kind of modeled the rest of distribution of everything else on that.
Interesting. Okay, it's good. Thank you, Kimber.
You're very welcome.
While they were trying to figure out how exactly to organize records, they had several questions, and I think maybe if they have more questions, is it okay if I give them your email just in case they have questions like how did you use this and that?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and I would just to kind of tie it into our first section, one of the benefits of having our systems librarian with the IT department was when we had this same kind of centralization in March with needing to pull all of the district's laptops and Chromebooks and calculators and everything into Alma. She was right there in the IT department. Mm. And so she did a lot of the cataloging and, you know, for stuff that didn't already have a barcode, we just use that number on the bottom of the computer. You know, it's not really a UPC number, it's the serial number.
Right.
But it can be scanned.
So yeah.
Anything we could find that could be scanned, we used as a barcode, and that's worked out really, really well. And the nice thing too about it being centralized like that is now that we have students requesting technology or even staff making requests, they can put them in a centralized queue. And so it's not, you may be at Skyline College, but you might get a laptop that actually belongs to Kenyatta. It's just whichever one is next in the available to the person in the queue. So that has worked out really well.
Mm-hmm. We also found out that while everything has an LTCC asset tag number, there was no record of what asset tag went to what item anywhere. It's literally just a sticker with a number on it. So we've been using the asset tags, especially for technology, as their call number. So there's a tied, we scan in the serial number, the barcode, and the asset tag, which now ties that machine to it that is this machine. But there was no database, there was no spreadsheet, no one had any idea what asset tags were on what there, and they're on everything. They're on my mouse, on my desk, they're on my monitor, they're on my computer, but there's no central database of what any of those asset tags belong to until now.
Yeah. And one of the quirks in Alma, of course, is this three-level thing, right? You have the BIB record, you have the holdings record, and you have the item record. Mm-hmm. And the holdings is really where the call number is supposed to go, because your call number would apply to all the items in a book system. But if you're using iPhones for hotspots, it's not quite the same, you know? And so what we ended up doing to have stuff show up correctly in lists is using the description field, and you can put it might be iPhone hotspot might be the call number at the holdings level. And then in the description field, you could have 10 and 11, you know, whatever number it was. And then they line up really nicely. So that was,
we have done that too.
Yeah, that was a trick we had to learn, though.
Okay. That's great. I mean, what you share, it's, thank you. And now I see that it's the idea to use Alma for IT purpose, for IT items. It's not as revolutionary as we thought. other colleges are doing pretty much the same. It's nice that we have this group, you know, and sharing all this experience. Amazing. Thank you.
Yeah.
Tatiana, I think a handful of us, we actually do our brief records in reserves as a way to categorize these non-library materials. So for example, the math department, we've always had their calculators. So they already have a reserve course where their calculators as well as their books are listed in a reading list. Now they want to add these little kits that have different types of things in them. We just added another item record, and that's where we put them. So it's, you know, considered a temporary collection. We don't know if it's just going to end up with us or if they're going to take it back eventually. But that's how we dealt with these extra things, is to put it under reserves.
But I think when you create, when you use reserve, you still need to choose from the repository, right? Or you just add a new item.
I use Add Brief Record, and it does give you all the fields, but we do title, barcode. I think we put the parts in them, and with a fulfillment note, if we want to just make sure to check during checkout and check-in different parts. Mm-hmm. And then I just duplicated the barcode, and the call number are different.
I see.
Yeah, the permanent record, I think, is under circulation, which is just a random location, but I put it in reserve as a temporary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And again, since our system library is not available, I didn't have a way to pick a type or a loan that was appropriate to a semester loan. So I had to change all the due dates accordingly. But at least it's centralized where I can find all of these special materials.
Lisa, can I ask you a question about that?
Say,
Are those materials just for circulating during COVID, or is that the situation, how you guys had it set up beforehand?
Well, it was intended for COVID, but I believe that we have also adopted certain things too. So for example, we use the CARES Act to get a whole bunch of hotspots for students, but we did not loan all of them out yet. So we thought we were gonna give it back to Student Services, which is the point where it started. But they're like, well, since you're the ones that are checking them out to students, and we're gonna keep asking them if they need it, So we adopted the remaining amount, and in our upcoming distribution events, we'll be offering them the math department. They're like, you know what? Why am I putting it in storage every semester? Why don't I just leave it with you and my other reserve material? So the intention was to be temporary. My plan would be, if it does end up being more permanent reserves, the systems librarian will be back and I can adjust the, the type, the loan period, so that it would work even more efficiently than it is right now. Again, I'm in that make do state until she returns.
Yeah, we've had to put our hands up, like, no, please don't leave those here with a lot of things. We have agreed to the computers because we do already have all of the math department's Chromebooks in locked cases. So they're just going to get more locked cases for that area to store, not all, but, you know, a stock, so to speak, of Chromebooks and hotspots that can be easily out. The way that it's looking, the campus is undergoing a huge RFE project starting in next year. So half of our campus is going to be offline and literally under construction. So bringing back the library as far as distribution, and there's nowhere else that can do it. And IT's in that wing that's being demolished. So it's kind of we have the room right now, so we'll take it. But I you know, it's, when do we say stop? We can't take any more things.
Yeah, I think for with the reason I was asking about the reserve thing is we transitioned. I know we're almost out of time, but like at MiraCosta, we transitioned with learning centers that circulated a variety of materials, and they needed to be able to circulate those materials in Alma. And so set up, you know, like a different fulfillment units with locations and like appropriate terms of use, and like train their staff and have like very staff limited accounts. And that, and there's like reporting that you can do with analytics, that it seems like that would be, the reserves thing seems like it would get tricky over like a long period of time with like more and more items, like with different periods and stuff like that. But it's really interesting to like listen to everyone's different experiences with this, because we all kind of, I think everyone's experience has changed during COVID because we're circulating stuff that we weren't doing before, but also even before that, just the way we have our library set up and what people have circulating.
Yeah, Jay, we set up ours to be in reserves from the beginning, and we set up our reserves maybe in a different way than a lot of schools did, but we have like hourly reserves and daily reserves, and all those TOUs flow with that. And so all of our equipment, most of our equipment stuff at the time was in a 16-hour, fulfillment unit. So it worked out in that. Well, obviously, then we had to go to put everything in the semester loan rule. And now, and then it'll go back to where it's supposed to be when we get out of this COVID stuff. But we can always talk about that offline too.
And, okay.
So, well, Nikki, Miranda, and Greg, and Jamie, I know you were involved, but if you had any last minute things that you wanted to ask or share, we'd be happy to hear from you. They're too shy. I like that, Nikki. I know you're there. We talked before we officially started. So we're just happy, even if it were only our group and we were talking amongst ourselves, we're still learning from each other. And every time we get together, it's been good. So I really appreciate everybody's time and what they've shared, and you know, that we know we're all in this together. We've got resources to, you know, ask for, you know, I think everybody's open to follow-up questions and help. So if things come up next week, next semester, whatever, you know, let us know. So we're here. And I will see the group next week yet. Don't forget, one more meeting. And then, and then we'll be off. So thanks, everybody. Have a good evening. Stay safe out there.
Happy holidays.
And yes, happy holidays.
Lisa's got
get some rest, everyone.
See you next week.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't forget to end your